Imagine spending like $3,500 on this piece of technology. Yeah, they aggressively marketed it as the absolute future of human interaction.
Right, the next big thing.
Exactly. And then barely a year later, they just quietly admit it was a massive miscalculation. I mean, that is the exact reality Apple is facing right now.
It is. It's a profound reality check for Silicon Valley, honestly. We're watching the most valuable company in the world realize that, well, even infinite resources can't force a behavioral shift that users just don't want.
Yeah, they just don't want it. Anyway, welcome to a Friday Night Deep Dive. Today is August 7, 2026.
And we are synthesizing a really massive stack of sources tonight.
Yes.
Six industry-shaking news stories, actually.
Yeah, we've got a lot to get through. But
Yeah.
the overarching theme across tech, gaming, finance, it's all about this massive structural pivot.
Right, because whether you are catching up for a Monday morning meeting or you're just, insanely curious about where our digital ecosystems are heading, our mission tonight is to extract those essential aha moments.
Without drowning you in information overload, of course.
Exactly. Because looking at the primary sources, we really have this masterclass in how massive industries react when they're pushed into a corner.
Right, forced by market realities.
Yeah, we're seeing these long-held orthodoxies completely abandoned in real time.
Okay, let's unpack this because every major player, I mean, from Apple to Microsoft to the SEC, they're all basically tearing up their old playbooks.
It's wild to watch.
It really is. And Apple is the perfect starting point. The news from May 2026 confirmed that Apple has officially delayed the Vision Pro 2 until at least 2028.
But the sources reveal it's actually much more severe than just, a simple timeline shift.
Oh, yeah. They have completely frozen the entire product pipeline. I mean, development on the cheaper Vision Air, the professional Vision Ultra, it's entirely paused.
And the sales data totally explains the severity of that freeze. I mean, Apple targeted 2 million units for the Vision Pro in its first year.
And what did they actually hit?
They moved roughly 500,000.
Wow. So just a quarter of their goal.
Right. Operating at a 25% success rate on a flagship, category-defining device, that forces an immediate, brutal reevaluation of the whole strategy.
So now they're completely pivoting all those spatial computing resources away from immersive VR and just dumping them into smart glasses.
Which is a huge shift.
It really is. The DeLorean analogy feels incredibly apt here, you know? The original Vision Pro was brilliantly engineered, totally futuristic, and like undoubtedly cool in a vacuum.
Which is totally impractical.
Exactly. It arrived at the wrong time with an exorbitant price tag and this isolating form factor that made it just totally impractical for daily life.
What's fascinating here is the psychological miscalculation Apple is correcting. The initial thesis was that high-fidelity pass-through video could, simulate presence.
Right, like you're not actually wearing a headset.
Yeah, effectively bypassing the isolating nature of it. But the market demonstrated that mainstream technology really has to integrate passively.
People just don't want to be locked away.
Exactly. Consumers refuse to carve out a dedicated, physically isolated session just to put a computer on their face.
Right.
The pivot to smart glasses acknowledges that the hardware must conform to existing human behavior, like wearing regular eyewear, rather than demanding users conform to the hardware.
But here's my pushback on that. If they failed so spectacularly at convincing us to wear an isolated VR headset in our living rooms, I really struggle to see how they convince the public to wear sensor-laden smart glasses out in the real world.
That's the privacy question, yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a device constantly looking at what you are looking at. The privacy implications are a massive hurdle for consumer trust. Why would we suddenly trust them with that?
Well, the engineering documents and the sources highlight how they are addressing that exact hurdle. And it's through on-device AI.
Okay, so keeping it off the cloud.
Right. Apple is architecting these glasses so the neural processing unit handles the artificial intelligence locally. The camera feeds, the spatial mapping, the contextual prompts, none of it gets sent to a cloud server unless explicit granular permission is granted by the user.
Ah.
By processing the data at the edge, directly on the silicon sitting on your face, they eliminate the latency of cloud tripping and theoretically neutralize the surveillance concerns.
Okay, so the failure of the Vision Pro actually dictates the hardware landscape you and I will be interacting with for the next half decade.
Pretty much, yeah.
We bypass the heavy, immersive walled gardens and move straight into lighter, privacy-first wearables driven by localized AI.
And this shift away from restrictive, isolated environments isn't just happening in wearable hardware. we're seeing an identical philosophical shift in the gaming sector, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Where the traditional model of locking users into a closed hardware ecosystem is just being aggressively dismantled.
Yeah, the console wars have fundamentally changed. Microsoft is doing something right now that would have sounded like absolute fiction like 5 years ago.
Oh, for sure.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 is launching on the Nintendo Switch 2.
A native port, no less.
Yeah, the sources confirmed this is a native port playable at Gamescom Hall 9 from August 26th to the 30th. This is not some cloud streaming workaround where you need a flawless fiber connection to play. It's running directly on the local mobile hardware.
The technical achievement of scaling the Modern Warfare engine to run natively on a portable architecture is significant in itself, but the business implications are staggering.
It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're looking at the end of a 13-year drought. The last time Call of Duty touched a Nintendo ecosystem was 2013 with Ghosts on the Wii U.
That is wild.
An entire demographic of gamers has essentially aged into adulthood without this franchise on their primary hardware.
And Nintendo is totally capitalizing on that demographic crossover. They're pairing this massive third-party arrival at Gamescom with their own heavy-hitting exclusive 1007 First Light.
A smart move on their part.
But the Call of Duty move stems directly from Microsoft's $68.7 billion buyout of Activision Blizzard, right? And that legally binding 10-year contract they signed to appease regulators.
Yes, exactly.
But Microsoft isn't just tearing down software walls. They're aggressively manipulating the hardware market.
Right. The handheld pricing.
Yeah, looking at the pricing data for handhelds in 2026, the Xbox ROG Ally, the handheld they collaborated on with Asus, is like the only major device dropping in price this year.
It's pretty aggressive.
Very. The base model is sinking to $599 and the X model to $899, while competitors like the Steam Deck OLED and Lenovo Legion Go are actually revising their prices upward.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, Microsoft is utilizing Game Pass to heavily subsidize that hardware cost. They can afford to take a loss or just break even on a $599 ROG Ally because the hardware is just a delivery mechanism for the high-margin software subscription. We are basically witnessing the final death of the traditional hardware war.
So it's not about plastic boxes anymore.
Right. The metric for success is no longer how many consoles you sold. It's your monthly active users across your entire software ecosystem.
Wait, how does that math actually work long term, though? I mean, we are all familiar with the classic razor and blades business model, right?
Sure.
But subsidizing a $600 razor to sell a $15 a month blade requires an astronomical retention rate to break even. And by bringing the absolute crown jewel of the Xbox portfolio Call of Duty natively to a rival console like the Switch 2, doesn't Microsoft risk completely diluting the Xbox hardware brand? Like, why buy an Xbox if the best games are on Nintendo?
Because the definition of the Xbox brand has evolved. It's no longer just a physical console sitting under your television. It's a pervasive cloud and software layer.
A service, basically.
Exactly. Exclusivity used to be the primary weapon. But Microsoft realized that exclusivity creates an artificial ceiling on revenue. A native port to the Switch 2 captures millions of users who would literally never buy an Xbox console anyway.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. When a player buys Modern Warfare 4 on the Switch, Microsoft captures the revenue. When a player buys a discounted ROG Ally and subscribes to Game Pass, Microsoft captures the recurring revenue. They're sacrificing hardware supremacy to achieve omnipresence as a service provider.
Wow. Okay. The walled garden is simply too expensive to maintain when the alternative is just taxing transactions across every screen on Earth.
Precisely.
So speaking of moving away from isolated, rigid interfaces, the way we interact with artificial intelligence is going through a similar structural overhaul.
The transactional approach is definitely being replaced.
Yeah. The industry is finally recognizing the limitations of the chatbox interface. We're transitioning out of that novelty phase of generative AI and entering a mature, collaborative productivity phase.
OpenAI has officially introduced Canvas, right?
Yes, Canvas. It's a new side-by-side interface for ChatGPT. The sources explain that instead of forcing users to copy and paste entire blocks of text into the chat to make a minor change, Canvas opens a dedicated workspace window.
Which is so much better for workflow.
Oh, massively. It triggers automatically if your prompt exceeds 10 lines, or you can just manually prompt it with use Canvas.
Nice.
Once it's open, you can highlight specific sections of code or paragraphs of text, and the AI edits those highlighted sections in real time, all while maintaining the rest of the document. And Google AI Studio has simultaneously launched a similar feature called the Collaborative Editor.
The technical mechanics behind this shift are really driven by context window efficiency.
How so?
Well, in a standard chat interface, if you ask an LLM to change one paragraph in a 10-page document, you often have to regenerate the entire 10 pages.
Oh, right, which takes forever.
Yeah, it wastes compute tokens, and it actually increases the risk of the model hallucinating changes in the unedited sections. Canvas alters that vector space interaction. It isolates the highlighted segment, processes the localized change, and integrates it seamlessly without disrupting the broader context.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I like to think about the old ChatGPT interface like a terrible drive-through window.
Okay, I like this.
Yeah, so you pull up to the speaker, you place this massive complex order, and they hand you a sealed bag. If you look in the bag and realize, I want to change my side from fries to a salad, You couldn't just hand the fries back through the window.
Right, you had to start over.
Exactly. You had to drive all the way around the building and reorder the entire meal from scratch, just hoping they didn't mess something else up in the process. Canvas is like the restaurant manager finally unlocking the back door, letting you walk into the kitchen, and allowing you to just cook the meal alongside a sous chef.
That sous chef analogy perfectly illustrates the shift from a transactional query to a truly iterative workflow.
It just makes so much more sense.
It does. When we look at how professionals actually utilize these models for complex tasks, you know, like refactoring hundreds of lines of Python code or iteratively adjusting the tone of a professional email or a quarterly financial report, a sequential chat feed is just an active bottleneck.
Yeah. The sources do note, though, that this Canvas UI is effectively a bridge technology. Like, it's serving as an industry standard right now, but OpenAI plans to replace it with inline blocks when GPT 5.5 rolls out.
Embedding the AI directly into the text fields we already use.
Right.
Which really further proves the point. To unlock the real economic value of artificial intelligence, it can't be a separate destination you visit just to ask a question.
Right, it can't be a walled-off tool.
Exactly, and it has to become a collaborative layer embedded directly into the continuous workspace.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is maturing by adapting to human workflow patterns, rather than forcing humans to learn clunky prompting syntax.
That maturation process is definitely a recurring theme tonight. AI is establishing mature standards, but an even more chaotic sector of technology has just crossed a massive institutional threshold.
You're talking about crypto.
Oh, yeah. The cryptocurrency market has officially transitioned from a speculative, chaotic Wild West into a highly regulated institutional financial ecosystem.
And that integration into traditional finance has been a brutal, multi-year grind characterized by intense legal scrutiny and massive capital shifts.
Oh, brutal is the right word. Let's look at the institutional footprint on Ethereum. According to the data, U.S. spot ETH ETFs saw $92.1 million in inflows on August 6th alone.
That's a huge single-day number.
Yeah, and BlackRock's ETH fund is just entirely dominating this space. They've captured an 88% market share with $11.611 billion in total cumulative inflows. On top of that, the SEC just approved options trading on these ETFs.
Which is a very big deal.
And BlackRock is executing a 1-for-3 reverse split on October 6th.
The approval of options trading is really the critical data point there. It introduces derivatives market liquidity.
Which means what for the average person listening?
It means it allows institutional investors to hedge their positions and execute complex, risk-adjusted trading strategies. That's the basic plumbing required for massive pension funds and endowments to even participate.
Yeah.
And the reverse split further aligns the asset with traditional equity mechanics.
Okay, so what does this all mean for the actual price mechanics? Because a reverse split, you know, it doesn't change the market cap or the intrinsic value of an investor's holdings.
No, it doesn't.
But it's like slicing a pizza. If you have three slices at $10 and they consolidate it into one giant slice at $30, your portfolio value is identical. It seems purely psychological. Like they are trying to make it look like a gourmet, high-priced meal for Wall Street executives who refuse to buy cheap shares.
It is entirely optics-driven, you're right. But those optics actually dictate capital flow.
Oh, so.
Many institutional investors operate under strict mandates that prevent them from allocating capital to assets trading under a certain dollar threshold.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Low-priced shares carry a historical stigma of volatility and immaturity in traditional finance. By artificially raising the per-share price while maintaining the exact same total value, BlackRock is essentially structuring the ETF to bypass those institutional compliance filters.
Okay, so they are conforming the asset to the rigid rules of Wall Street rather than forcing Wall Street to adapt to the asset.
Precisely.
But Ethereum's institutional wrap is only one side of this maturation story. We have the official conclusion of the most defining legal battle in the sector's history.
The Ripple lawsuit.
Yes, the Ripple versus SEC lawsuit is over. This was a five-year legal war that started when the SEC alleged Ripple sold $1.3 billion in unregistered securities. And the resolution just landed with Ripple paying a $50 million fine.
But the legacy of that lawsuit will not be the fine.
No, not at all.
It's the precedent established by the July 2023 Judge Torres ruling. The court determined that XRP traded on public exchanges via algorithmic matching is not a security.
Which was a massive win for them.
Huge. That ruling created a massive legal bifurcation, establishing that the mechanism of how a digital token is sold matters just as much as the underlying nature of the token itself.
Right. And before we delve into the aftermath of that ruling, the sources do highlight a very specific, somewhat controversial detail regarding the origins of this lawsuit.
Right. About Jay Clayton.
Yeah. Jay Clayton, the former SEC chair who actually launched the enforcement action against Ripple, like right at the exact end of his tenure. Well, he was just confirmed as the Director of National Intelligence on July 28, 2026.
And to be clear to you listening, we have to note there is significant tension in the source material here.
Yes, absolutely. Factions view the initial lawsuit through a highly political lens, arguing it unfairly targeted an American financial technology company.
But we want to be very clear. We are strictly relaying the context provided by our sources regarding the market's reaction to his appointment.
Exactly. We are entirely neutral here, just analyzing the economic fallout of these events without validating any of the political claims from either side.
Right. And looking strictly at that economic fallout, this raises an important question regarding the realities of the market in 2027.
Which is?
Well, Ripple survived the litigation, but they paid $150 million in legal fees just to achieve a highly nuanced victory. The Torres ruling protected secondary market exchange sales, sure, but Ripple's direct sales to U.S. institutional buyers remain heavily restricted.
So they're still not totally in the clear.
No. They're relying on the proposed Clarity Act to establish definitive legislative rules for institutional interaction. But current projections from the sources give that act only a 14% chance of passing Congress.
Wow, 14%. That paints a very conflicted picture of regulatory clarity.
It really does.
I mean, you have BlackRock effortlessly pulling in $11.6 billion through an SEC-approved Ethereum ETF, while the companies that actually built the underlying blockchain infrastructure spent half a decade and hundreds of millions of dollars just fighting for the right to exist in the secondary market.
It suggests that regulatory clarity was not necessarily achieved through sweeping equitable legislation, but rather through traditional financial incumbents flexing their existing compliance infrastructure.
Wall Street just bought its way in.
Yeah, the crypto market survived the Wild West phase, but the ultimate victors appear to be the traditional Wall Street institutions that just waited for the pioneers to clear the legal brush before moving in and dominating the ETF landscape.
The pioneers took the arrows, and the traditional banks secured the land. It's a tale as old as time.
Very true.
And it perfectly mirrors the broader theme we've tracked through tonight's sources. The overarching lesson of August 7, 2026 is that whether you are an innovative blockchain startup, a gaming titan, or the most valuable hardware company on earth, survival demands an absolute willingness to abandon your old orthodoxies.
You really cannot be precious about your past strategies when the market mechanics or consumer behaviors undergo a fundamental shift.
Right. Apple swallowed its pride on a multi-billion-dollar spatial computing bet.
Microsoft sacrificed the exclusivity of its hardware to become an omnipresent software service.
And OpenAI completely rebuilt its core interface to align with how humans actually work.
Understanding these massive structural pivots doesn't just make you informed, it allows you to anticipate the friction in your own daily interactions with technology.
Exactly. The isolated, walled-off ecosystems that defined the last decade of tech are actively crumbling, making way for integrated, collaborative, and, well, highly regulated systems.
The tools and platforms that refuse to open their borders or fail to integrate seamlessly into existing human workflows, they're going to face the exact same harsh market realities that forced Apple to freeze the Vision Pro.
Which leaves us with a final concept to consider as you step back from tonight's deep dive. The sources definitively prove that the largest, most well-resourced entities on the planet are constantly forced to rewrite their entire playbooks the moment user behavior shifts.
Because they have to.
Exactly. So if companies with unlimited capital like Apple and Microsoft are willing to instantly abandon their long-held strategies to ensure survival, what stubborn strategy in your own professional life might be overdue for a canvas-style rewrite?
That's a great question.
Are you still trying to force a metaphorical VR headset onto a problem when a simple pair of lightweight glasses is what the situation actually requires?
Something to mull over.
Definitely something to think about as you head into the weekend. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we will see you next time.